The toy bar is open! Come wander on in, grab a stool, and hang out with a drink while your hosts and toy barflies, Jason Duvall and Dave Draper, discuss, argue, and celebrate their love of toys, games, and all things collectible. Brought to you by... we'll get back to you on that. This is Dave and Duvall's Toys and Collectibles.
Hello there.
Hello there.
That killed the mood.
Yes.
What?
Way to go, Blake.
What did I do now?
The ringtone was like banging, man. We were
Dave, oh, Dave was dancing, and then you had to answer and just go and ruin everything.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's
well,
okay.
Next time y'all can just dial a Skype test.
Yeah.
Well, then that's no fun, because then we have the anticipation of somebody being on the other end. And...
Well, that nice British lady answers.
Oh, I didn't know there was a British lady that answers.
I'm going to call her now. I don't know my Skype lore.
I'm going to be like,
yeah.
What?
She's like, hello, and thank you for calling the Skype test line. Please say something after the beep, and then if you say something and if you hear it back, she goes, you have configured Skype correctly. Congratulations.
I'd have asked her what she's wearing. What are you wearing?
Yeah. Yeah, that might get a little awkward.
Yeah. I always ask that at the FedEx machine when I have to call FedEx sometimes. She's like, the FedEx, the lady, it's electronics, like, what can we help you with? I'm like, what are you wearing? She's like, I did not understand. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, well.
Damn it.
It Ooh. Happens, man.
I know. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I'm currently in Nashville, Tennessee, on Gearforia business.
Nice.
Which starts tomorrow. But in the meantime, just trying to... figure out. Holly's on the dinner wagon trying to figure out where we're going to go eat. I think since we're here in Nashville, we're probably going to go to a hot chicken place or something like that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So that would explain why no Comic-Con for you this year, huh?
Yeah, conflicting dates. They've done this to us before where Summer NAMM, which is the show that's here in Nashville, and Comic-Con are exactly the same dates. The one year, a couple of years prior, I went to Comic-Con and Holly came here. Circumstances being what they are, I don't really have any books or anything right now. So
right.
It just didn't make much sense other than just going out and hanging with people. That's an expensive hang though. So
yeah, as I say, you're saving a lot of money by not going to San Diego this weekend.
Right. And this, at least Tennessee is the idea behind us being here is to actually, you know, get money.
Yeah, exactly.
As far as advertisers for the magazine. So
yeah, you'd like to be there to actually make a living and not be like, well, I'm just going to go to Comic-Con, what the hell.
Yeah. Now I always get a little misty for a brief few minutes right when I start seeing all my friends, you know, so hey, San Diego, we're here, blah blah blah. I'm like, ah. Then I realize that, you know, at least I'm $2,500 richer right now.
That's true. I got over that feeling a long time ago, and I was like, you know what, don't care, I'll look at all your pictures, you guys have fun.
Yeah,
all of that humanity that is costing you way more than a Disney World vacation would cost a family of five.
Yeah, there's very little going on that I know about that I'm really that interested in this year. I'm interested to see what Dark Crystal stuff pops up. I know Weta is apparently doing their little epic minis or whatever they're called, which I dig that line, so I'll be interested to see what those look like. Other than that, I could really couldn't care less.
Yeah, I'd say I don't know if David has seen anything that's really, like, tweaked your interest at all, like, for Comic-Con. I know I'm curious to see what Marvel does with their Hall H presentation, which boggles my mind that they came back to Comic-Con when D23 is literally next month.
Yeah. I guess they figured, well, we'll do Marvel at Comic-Con and Star Wars at D23. I don't know.
Yeah, it's very interesting to... I mean, I'm sure D23 this year will be all about... the actual date, start date of Disney Plus, and you know, another Star Wars trailer.
Right.
But I would be surprised if Marvel releases their entire film lineup.
The big news, yesterday is Thor 4.
Yeah, Thor 4 got approved. That was
is that necessary?
Maybe.
Thor 4.
I think because Taiki...
Is it as Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever?
No. And Gunn has said specifically that Guardians 3 will not be called that.
Yeah. Although he hasn't said that Thor won't be involved in Guardians
3. No, he didn't say Thor wouldn't be involved, but yeah. He said specifically it'll be Guardians Volume 3.
Yeah, it'll be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. But with
Thor 4 could be as Guardians of the Galaxy.
Thor 4 could be as Guardians. But yeah, Taika Waititi came back because the Akira movie that he was signed on to direct has been...
I thought that was delayed because he was doing
it. No, I guess they were having problems with... The script was having problems, and they fixed those, and then it got delayed indefinitely, and that made him go, all right, maybe that's a sign that you shouldn't make a live-action Akira movie anytime soon, or even at all.
Yeah, it sounds like a money thing.
Yeah, because let's face it, while Alita Battle Angel was okay... It didn't really make a whole lot of cash at the box office, and that kind of thing happens when they're like, here's the end of the movie, we're setting up another sequel.
I think part of it also is, I'm just going to cut you off.
No, that's fine. Let
you off the hook.
No, that's fine.
I think another part of it is that they've kind of found a hook for Thor finally after three movies, and they want to kind of keep that going.
Yes.
That now they're doing the comedy thing. So, I mean, there's ways, like, honestly, even though I didn't like the third, like, even though I had this weird reaction to the third one, let me put it that way, like, all the serious stuff is out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, his dad's dead,
Jesus, David.
Who's left of Asgard is under Queen Valkyrie's, saying is, like, now you can have wacky misadventures, and I won't kind of feel annoyed about the whole tone being, like, bring in Beta Ray Bill, do the frog story, like, please, Taika Waititi doing the frog storyline. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
It'd be glorious.
Frog Thor would be great.
Frog Thor would be amazing. And I can see him doing that. Like if anyone would do it, it would be Taika.
Yeah. Oh, and ladies and gentlemen, just for those of you tuning in,
we didn't
really start the podcast like we usually do. I just figured, well, what the hell, we'll just start chatting. But, of course, we're joined by noted author Blake Wright, our good friend, who is currently finishing up his second volume of The Toys That Time Forgot. Which kickstarted earlier this year and was very, very successful.
Yes,
I think you're in the last stages, aren't you? You've proofed it. And
where's my book?
I've got my final proof copy is sitting right in front of me right now. I'm going through it one last time. I just got the forward submitted earlier this week, so that was the last piece of text we were waiting on.
Who's I don't remember. Did you announce who's writing the forward this time?
No, but if you looked around, you could figure it out.
Oh, okay.
But I hadn't said up until this point, but I can say it's
up to you. I'll let you reveal it if you want.
No, it's fine. It's Randy Falk.
NECA. Okay, cool. That makes sense because I did see you guys conversing, so that does make sense.
Yeah. No, I mean Randy. I mean he has been really. If there was anybody as instrumental in getting these books done, other than the person who wrote them, would be Randy Falk.
Right.
He's been just, just a hell of a support mechanism for this whole process.
Well, and he was one of the initial, like, real encouragers when you took all that stuff to Toy Fair, and he was like, you've got to do this book.
Yeah. He was like, what do you need? You know, short of writing me a check, he was on board all the way.
Does Randy still have a lot of the stuff that they didn't produce? Because I know some of the stuff was in the first book.
Yeah, NECA's studio in Jersey had all the two-ups are there.
Okay.
Even of the stuff that they haven't made. It's if you ever get a chance, not that I want everybody to go bombard Hillside Jersey in New Jersey. Right. But if you're ever in the area and they're amenable to having you come there, it's awesome because they're just – it's wall-to-wall two-ups of stuff that they have produced and stuff that they haven't. So
that's awesome.
It really is something to see.
That's very cool. And you're still on track to have that book out by winter, right?
What's going to happen is my date in my head to get this thing to the printer is no later than the first week of August. So it's coming up.
Gotcha.
And it's pretty much there.
Are they being printed in the States or are they being printed overseas again?
It's overseas.
Yeah.
So it'll be, that's like a 6 week, effort where just getting him run, getting him bound, getting him boxed, getting them shipped back over here to me takes about 6 weeks. So that'll place it sometime, hopefully mid to late September, and then we can start sending them out. So I think the date on the Kickstarter was, I think I said October. Yeah. So that still looks good. Yeah.
Cool. There you go, David. There, you'll have your book in October.
Mm-hmm.
That way you don't have to keep bitching at our guests about
I'm just saying, like, apparently this was the month that everybody is fulfilling their Kickstarters.
Yeah.
Like, so...
As Dave gets giant package O Kickstarters this
month. I've gotten four in the last 3 weeks.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Ah, if only Zyka Toys could actually ship some stuff.
They are showing off the final
test
paint
samples.
Decos.
I saw that. They actually
don't look bad.
Yeah. I saw that. They were talking about Sektars, too, and I was like, man, wasn't the Sektars Kickstarter, like, 2.5 years ago now?
It was after the Captain Action ones, the Adventure People.
Yeah, Jesus.
So, yeah, well, they're doing them both at the same time.
I know. That's what's hampering them up is problems with the factory. And
yeah, well, they encountered cultural problems, which none of the backers are supposed to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But they brought in a guy
who knew what he was doing.
Yeah, I think who's helped some of the other people
yeah.
who can handle the local situation.
Oh, jeez. So, Blake, as somebody who isn't actively collecting new lines, save for I imagine you're still buying a thing here and there, much like me, where I'm like, ooh, new Transformer. So the HasLab thing with Unicron, did you I'm sure you've seen it.
Yeah.
Holy God.
It's awesome.
Oh, yeah, no, it's an amazing piece of work.
And I actually just saw some photographs from Comic-Con that popped up on Facebook of the, I guess it's the prototype model. And it's gigantic.
Yeah.
So good on Hasbro. That's what HasLab should be, as far as I'm concerned. Getting, you know, this stuff that you're just not going to get it otherwise.
Right.
So now is it $600 worth of cool?
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's a lot of scrap. Like the sail barge was one thing.
Even that, I don't know. It was more like $400. Like, but here's the thing that people I think aren't considering is that there's no economics of scale with these. They're almost like made to order.
Right.
So you're not selling it to every store in America. You're selling it to like a couple thousand people.
Yeah.
Right.
So there is that price reduction that normally comes from selling at retail.
Yeah, and I'm not a big enough Transformers guy to even consider dropping that kind of money on a Unicron, but I do believe there are those guys are out there.
Oh yeah.
Now are there 8,000 of them? I think was the number.
Yeah.
That's steep. Yeah. So
they're almost at 2,000. I looked almost. They were like 1,700, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now the Cookie Monster's not doing good. Like the Cookie Monster.
That was a weird one.
Yeah, the Cookie Monster needs like 5,000. There's 3,000 backers. And it's only got like 300, so.
Yeah, that was a tough one too. Now I was a fan of the Master Replicas because I had that Kermit. They did these photorealistic or photo model Muppets that they did a handful of them. They did Kermit and
Gonzo, Animal,
and Animal.
Fozzie they showed and never did.
Right.
Because they went out of business before Fozzie could get made.
Right.
So they did those three, and yeah, they were cool, but they were also like super, super limited runs. Like, I think there was only like maybe 400 of each one or something like that.
Yeah, and those were $200. Of course, this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
So my question was, is the Cookie Monster in scale with those?
He's in scale with the puppet. I mean, he's quote life-size.
Yeah, I think he would be, Blake, because the photo puppets are supposed to represent the actual scale if the puppets were, you know, full-bodied, kind of like realistic.
Right.
You know, because Kermit, the Animal, and the Gonzo were all to scale with what the puppets would have been had they have been freestanding. I think Cookie Monster is along that same scale.
Yeah. Well, then he is huge because Cookie Monster was big.
Oh, yeah, no, I was going to say he's got to be a big guy because you think about how Cookie Monster's operated. I mean, you know, two people, you know, some of the other, like Rolf and that, but the way he's made is he has so much more fabric in between the neck and the arms, so it just looks like he's got these big wing arms sometimes when he's moving.
Right.
But yeah, he's a big puppet with a big head on him, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I agree with what Hasbro is doing as far as taking this tact of saying, you know, this is something you're never going to get anywhere else, and this is your opportunity for it. Now, they're going to be hits and misses, just like with everything. Cookie Monster, maybe.
Maybe it's
a miss. Maybe it's not the right time. And like I said, 8,000 people for a $600 transformer, that's going to be tough too. But that might get there. You know, I'll be curious to see what they do next. If they keep maybe doing one kind of left field thing, a la Cookie Monster, and then one brand based thing. Like I know everybody in the G.I. Joe world is ready for what they're going to do with Joe, if they're going to do that at all. So,
I know everybody's clamoring for a new flag.
Or Marvel Legend, you know. So it will be really interesting to watch. I mean, it would appear that from everything I've seen, the sale barge was a success, even after people got them. I didn't hear anybody bitching about the quality or anything. It looked like a beautiful thing.
Oh, it is. Like the one thing I can say is it may have been more than I think really it should have been, but the actual final product is amazing. It is wonderful.
Heads above what they had done, you know, of course, retail-wise.
Well, I mean, I've got, like, their crappy-ass helicarrier.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, no, this is nothing like that. It is – it's better than some of the vintage toys that they did.
Yeah.
Right.
For Joe. Yeah. Like, it's amazing. It's a really great toy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what – you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's what the Star Wars base deserves. I mean, that's your largest fan base right now. So, well,
is it?
I guess between that and Marvel, I guess. But it seems to be the one that, you know, always has the deepest pockets for whatever reason.
Someone tell Target that.
Yeah, no shit.
And Walmart.
Those guys don't want to carry any Star Wars.
Yeah, there's no, those shelves are bare.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know why? You're staring at a new movie's coming down the pike, so they'll load back up. Trust me.
Yeah, but they kind of went sparse about a month after Solo came out a year ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not been good.
Yeah, well, it's never going to be the same.
No.
It's just not. You know, even from you would have thought they would all learn their lesson after you know, they all took a bath on Episode One, but they still stocked all that stuff. I don't know. Retail is really funky right now. Really funky. I mean, every time I look at CNN or any of the USA Today or whatever, some big box store is going out of business.
Yeah.
And sometimes multiple. So it's just and then the whole Toys R Us thing with whatever the hell those guys are doing.
Who knows with that? I mean, we're still waiting on KB apparently to open up, you know. They were supposed to open up pop-up stores last Christmas. That didn't happen, so...
Yeah, they can't get the money for it. There's no financing for it.
Yeah.
The terms I'm sure that any bank is offering them right now is pretty onerous. So they're like, well, we can't afford to do it that way.
Yeah, it's just not worth it. And that's going to be the same case with the Toys R Us guys trying to open up, like... I think they said, like, 3 stores is what they were going to open up initially. But I just don't see it... I think the time for a full-body toy store has come and gone. I think when you've got outlets like Amazon and Big Bad
and have them in Canada.
They do, but what I understand, the ones in Canada aren't doing that great either.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think that period has come and gone.
You might be right.
Now, I did see some interesting things. There was a store that we went to in Branson that was a toy store that was like a new and used toy store, but of course all the new toys were, you know, Hasbro board games and stuff like that, and like, you know, like slime toys and like Melissa and Doug stuff, but then they also bought vintage toys, so they had a large smattering of like vintage Star Wars and oddball like Fisher Price stuff, and it was a really weird it was a really weird amalgam of the two different types of toy stores in one.
Well, it sounds like they were doing like what comic stores kind of do, where you have like the vintage, you know, the back issues, and you have the modern stuff.
Yeah.
Like Puzzle Zoo out in L.A. I don't know if they're still around, but that was a little chain that was out in
I remember Puzzle Zoo.
California for a while that did that sort of thing as well. just had older stuff mixed in with newer stuff.
I remember seeing their ads in the bi-weekly toy newspaper that came out. And comic store, and I can't think what the hell it was called.
I think it was just called Toy News.
Toy Shop. That's what it was called, yeah. They used to have ads in there all the time, and then, of course, they used to have ads in Lee's and Tomart's a lot. But, yeah, I don't even know if they're open anymore, because I remember going to one when I went first time to L.A. and walked into one and was not impressed.
Yeah, but, their pricing was high, but it was a mall store. It was everything was, you know, $3 to $5 more expensive than it should have been.
Yeah. That's the other problem is you have a lot of little mom and pop shops like that are in malls that are having to jack their prices up on stuff because they're going to, you know. I'm amazed that places like Kokomo are able to open where they're at. I can't imagine what they're paying on that building they're in, but, you know.
Well, to be fair, it's Kokomo, Indiana. I mean, you know, it's not like downtown New York or, Los Angeles.
True. Yeah. They renovated a lot of that building before they moved in, so.
And Kokomo does a lot of business on eBay.
A ton of it.
Because, I mean, they just don't have the walk-in traffic in Kokomo, Indiana.
Right, yeah, not at all.
But
unless you guys have guys like Dave and I who specifically went to Kokomo.
Well, yeah, and I think they've always had a very loyal G.I. Joe following.
Yeah. So. Now, the place is amazing. Todd and company do a wonderful job with that place. When we did the book tour for the first book, I did a signing up there.
Yeah.
And really had a great time. They treated us really well and would love to get back there sometime. Yeah.
I say it's beautiful. It's an amazing store.
Yeah,
and their selection is
it's really good.
Yeah, the prices aren't terrible. Like, you know, I bought
Depended on the toy.
Yeah, it depended on the toy.
But, you know.
I think Dave bought some stuff last time we went.
Oh, yeah.
I bought a bunch of stuff. A bunch of Supernaturals, Tomb of Doom in a box, that kind of stuff. And prices were reasonable for me. I'm like, better than most toy show prices I go to right now. So,
yeah.
It's just the toy, you know, with Walmart and Target's toy aisles getting smaller and smaller. Although they've grown a little bit, but still it's getting the companies to stock those aisles is... Unless it's, like you said, unless it's something new, like Toy Story 4, boy, those shelves are stocked.
Well, they have the initial... When they do initial release, they stock the shelves. But there's no restocks, there's no second wave.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be with, like, Star Wars, like, at least you got about three good waves. Like, for the past, I would say, 5 or 6 years, you got about three waves, and then after that, it was a mad scramble before the music stopped, and that line ended, and you got that one wave that... showed up once in Portland.
Yeah, that nobody could find.
Yeah. Now it's like you get one wave.
Yeah.
Now, is that because the stores aren't ordering it or because Hasbro's not shipping it? Because
the stores aren't ordering it.
Yeah, I think it's the buyers not ordering, you know, enough to both meet demand because at this point they don't even know where demand is.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to, like, the collector market. Like, they know Toy Story 4 stuff's going to sell even if there's a crap ton of it in every store. It's going to sell.
Maybe.
You know, but stuff like Marvel Legends and Star Wars, like, they know kids are kind of going to buy it, but now you're getting to
$21. Legends is a provable seller. Like, it always seems like they restock that, and there's always, like, one or two random leftover guys from the new wave.
Yeah.
Like, if you go in somewhere, like, Star Wars, no.
Yeah. Same with Transformers. There's always, they stock that, they sell, and then you get left with, like, the hangers-on.
Yeah.
That just nobody wants or they bought, and then you're just stuck with, like, oh, look, here's all of these Chromias sitting on a shelf, and I can't find any new ones. Yay!
Yeah, well, Star Wars is worse. I mean, Star Wars, the vintage, I think is what they call it these days.
Yeah.
Like it's basically that very first wave.
Yeah.
Which, if you remember, when they first announced it, I was like, oh, good, it's all the Walmart figures that all the collectors already have.
Yeah.
And to this day, I mean, like, it's wave one and a little bit of wave two. So you don't see any of the new figures because nobody's ordering them because they're crammed full of figures that all the collectors already have.
Yeah.
And then the ones for kids are in these tubes. And I don't know how long it took me before my brain finally realized, like, I would walk into stores and I would see these little tubes on the bottom shelf. And it took me forever to go, oh, wait, those are Star Wars figures. In those horrible little tubes that don't look like Star Wars toys.
You're like,
ugh. So, yeah.
It's just that's crazy. Crazy that Hasbro's gone that route with some of their stuff. They're like, here, we're going to put these figures in a tube now.
Don't
put them in a tube, Hasbro.
What's it? They put them in a tube, and then the stores put them on a bottom shelf.
Yeah, they get lost or crushed.
Yeah. Well, you don't see them. You don't realize what they are.
Yeah. Ugh. Jesus. Good old Walmart. Just something to bring up to Dave. Did you see Hot Toys has been teasing a Avengers Endgame Hulk?
I'm not the hugest fan of that version of the Hulk. I enjoyed it in the movie, but it's not. If I hadn't been at the original Avengers Hulk, I'm not gonna bite at a Hot Toys Hulk.
Yeah, that's true.
Although I am seriously thinking about getting, because apparently Marvel Select is actually doing an Endgame Hulk as opposed to putting a Professor Hulk head on a Hulk body. So I think I'm gonna pick that.
Thanks for that, Hasbro.
Yeah, like can't be bothered. Okay.
Yeah. Jesus. Man. So Blake, tell us.
Yeah, Blake. Hey, Blake.
Now that we've had some chats about the toys. What's going on with Volume 3 there, Blake? What's happening there, buddy?
You should see him. He's literally like stroking his his computer.
Volume 3 actually, is still. Just basically an outline sitting in front of me. I tend to take a few months off after, or at least I did after Volume 1, and I'll probably do the same thing after Volume 2 just to kind of collect my wits again. Now, Volume 2 got to be pretty big, so I actually had to push some items that were originally in 2 out to 3 just because I needed to. I couldn't make that big a book because of weight concerns and international shipping and all that jazz. So
right.
I think the final page count is a little bit bigger than the first one, but not by much. And it was a lot bigger than the first one early on, and I had to push out one or two chapters that were pretty much done. The Gilded Age, which is the most recent toys for Volume 3, is pretty much set already.
Really?
Yeah, just because I had a lot of I got a lot of information on some of those specific lines while I was doing the rounds on Volume 2. I would get, one company would give me 3 lines or something like that, and it just got to where I couldn't, get it all in one book.
Right.
Because I have some chunky chapters in Volume 2. I mean, there's a turtle chapter that's, 14, 16 pages. There's a superpowers chapter that's along those lines.
Yeah.
So, and not showing hardly, but maybe what I deemed the most interesting third of the information that I had.
Oh, wow.
Because, for Turtles, you can do a book on Turtles. It's been around long enough and so many different iterations. And, people have tried.
There was a book that was kickstarted, but apparently that's never going to friggin' happen.
Yeah, I mean, it warmed my little southern heart when I saw Dave's post about, if your name's not whoever, or Blake Wright, I am never pledging to your Kickstarter again.
Well, no, it wasn't that. It was just like, I'm not, like, it's like, if people don't start delivering, then there's 3 guys I know deliver.
Yeah.
And it was Marauders, it was Boss Fight, and
it was you.
I mean, like, I'm not, like, when you mentioned Turtles, I'm like, that to me, I'm really interested in that chapter already, because think of all the crap they did make.
Right.
Like, all the ridiculous nonsense. Like, I'm like, what did they reject? Yeah. I want to know. What did they say no to?
Well, I know for a while there, and Blake probably might touch on it in the book, but I know for a while there, all of the artists at Mirage Studios would draw up these ridiculous things. I guess at one point there was a contest within Mirage to see who could get the weirdest thing approved and produced by Playmates.
Is that how they got the farmers?
Well, yeah. It's probably how we got the farmers. It's probably how we got things like Monty Moose and stuff like that.
Monty Moose makes sense, though, within that world. Like, I'm like, farmer Ninja Turtles? That's insane.
You know, it was just yeah, no, back in the heyday when Turtles was going on all cylinders, it was like the Wild West. There were so many different people feeding that machine as far as concepts. I mean, you had the Mirage guys, you had the sculpting studios, Varner and Anaglyph, you had Playmates itself, you had other creatives that were putting forward concepts as well. I mean, there is no shortage of unmade concepts for Ninja Turtles, and you will see plenty of them in the forms of at least drawings in Volume 2.
Right.
And some just crazy stuff, like you were saying, what did you have to do to be, to not
rejected,
be accepted?
Yeah,
there's some crazy stuff, let me tell you. And some of it was just, you could look at it and go, wow, that's really cool, but just way too complex for what the Ninja Turtle figures were. But by the same token, it wasn't the only line like that, there was just so much stuff. I mean, Superpowers was another one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Well, where Dave's interested in the Turtles line, the Superpowers chapter is what, because I remember poring over Tomarts when they would print those Superpowers articles where they would show the artwork for, like, for Man-Bat or, the play set. They would show that stuff and you'd be like, oh, this would be so cool. And
yeah, I mean, Superpowers, again, there were so many drawings and concepts for vehicles even that were never made. I mean, Wave 4 that was pretty much all sculpted and before it was canceled. So I do have 3D representation, I think, of just about every Wave 4 figure that was planned.
Wow.
But they did so much more. Even Kenner itself started creating figures, that would go into the line.
Yeah.
Not necessarily had anything to do with Super Friends or anything in the cartoon. Because
isn't that how we got, like, Golden Pharaoh?
Golden Pharaoh and Maskatron, I want to say. Maybe I'm getting them confused with somebody else.
Maskatron, you're thinking of Bionic
Man. Yeah, but there's a guy with a mask that comes off. And then in Wave 4, it was supposed to be Quadrex.
There's Silicon, Quadrex, and my favorite, which was not not in Wave 4, but just a drawing, Harpoon.
Oh my God.
Which that drawing's kind of nuts. But there's, again, so much stuff I had to leave out because, you could do a book on superpowers if you really dug in there. And there are some, there was a lot of really cool work done for that line. Because, especially when you have a line that lasted 3 years, you have that first year, and then when the first year does well enough, second year, and then the machine really starts revving up, all these concepts start flying, and you just got to see what'll stick.
Yeah.
And then by the time, Wave 3 comes out, it was pretty much canceled already. That's why Wave 3 is kind of hard to find, because the numbers were down as far as the amount of figures they produced for Wave 3.
Yeah.
And why subsequently that's some of the more expensive stuff in that.
Yeah, which is always sad, because I remember as a kid, one of the only three Superpowers figures I had Superman, I had Batman, and I had Plastic Man.
Yeah.
And I just remember my Plastic Man. I had him forever, and I wish I knew what happened to him, because I had him up through my teenage years, and then he just kind of vanished, and I'm super sad that I don't know where that Plastic Man figure is, because I'm like, I had that figure, and he was still perfect.
Right. Yeah. And then there was, on a personal level, I wanted to try to get a mix of companies and not just concentrate on Playmates and Kenner and Mattel. I really wanted, and even in the first book,
You had a lot of different, variety in the first, because you had Sanrio, which nobody would have ever thought Sanrio of all people would have made a damn action figure or tried to.
Right.
Yeah,
but I mean, I really wanted something from like McFarlane or Mezco even, or some of the companies that are still around that have had these projects that like this.
Yeah.
And there is a McFarlane line in Volume 2.
Nice.
Which I was excited to be able to pull that together. But then, like, there's companies like LJN.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, I've been wanting to do Tiger Sharks since before issue one. I wanted to do Tiger Shark, or volume one. I wanted to do Tiger Sharks when I was doing Little Plastic Men magazine.
Yeah.
And that's one elusive line when it comes to the stuff that, that wasn't made for it. For whatever reason, I don't know if it's just maybe it ended up with a single collector who has it under lock and key or what, but it's very difficult to find information on Tiger Sharks. And I'm very, very close to putting it in volume two. But at the end of the day, I convinced myself that there was more info out there that I could probably find out. A couple more drawings maybe, maybe a sculpt or two. And so it ended up being pushed out to volume three. But, you know, there's also the V line, which is also,
because didn't all those get sculpted?
Yeah, V was in the catalog. It was in the LJN catalog. The vehicles, the 4-inch figures.
Because they used them in the show too, didn't they? Because
they had action figures in the show. I don't know if they were the LJN,
ones or not.
Yeah, because I mean that might have predated when LJN, because, you know, that was in the show.
Right.
And then the show became
bigger. Because that was 83.
Yeah, but they did in the show, the kids played with V action figures.
So you got, you know, a line like V, a line like the Dune line even, that had stuff done that didn't make it. So LJN's been kind of a, and then you can talk about Thundercats and that sort of thing as well.
But
LJN's been one of those companies that's been a really kind of hard nut to crack when it comes to that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I remember there was a time on eBay, this is, I don't know, like maybe 4 years back now, there was a sculptor for LJN that had just like, I don't know, I don't know if they were originals or castings, but I know that's where Dave got pretty much all of his accessories for his Dune figures.
Yeah.
I got a prototype sword for the Matchbox LJN Vehicle Force Voltron that never came with a weapon. Even though he has a sword in the show, they never packed him with a sword. So I've actually got the prototype version of that sword in his hand that I bought from this guy. And the guy was selling them for super cheap. But again, I'm like, I don't know if they're originals or he just made castings of the one he had. But wow, either way, whatever, man. This guy, and he was selling Tiger Shark accessories. And, you know, he for a long time, he was just selling a massive amount of this stuff. So he might have been one of those guys who just took everything, like, when the factory sent it over, like, that was left over, and he just took it because they were going to throw it away. And
yeah, I mean, there was a lot of
it for years.
A lot of situations like that. I mean, Last Starfighter, Galoob. The only reason that those six prototypes of the dozen that they showed, the six are still around, is because an ex-Galoob guy saved them from the trash.
Yeah.
They were being thrown out. And it was somebody who wasn't even involved with the project at all, but he didn't want to see that stuff get pitched, and so he grabbed it and kept it, you know, for however long he did before he ended up selling it. But, you know, by the same, you know, a lot of this stuff happens like that.
Well, as I say, you have stories like that where, and then you have, like, the Masters line. You know, famously, they had the big Brontosaurus that they were going to come out with the Powers of Grayskull stuff at the end.
Right.
And they showed it in the catalog, just this giant Brontosaurus playset that, you know, opened up. You could fit figures in it. He could eat figures. Like, it was a big thing. And I know for years they said that set on, one of the Mattel sculptors had it in the office, and then one day somebody knocked it onto the floor, and it just shattered into 1,000 pieces.
Yeah, I think I've heard that story.
Ugh.
Breaks
my heart, man. Yeah,
but do we know if it's true or not?
Well, that's the other thing. It's like, we've heard that story so much, but it's like, okay, well,
or is it just internet lore at this point?
You know, but I tend to believe it because I think I saw that story quoted by Emiliano Santolucci and his partner with Power and Honor. And I think because if anyone would have found it, they would have found it at this point with their connections.
Maybe they did, Jason.
Maybe it's hiding. And
yeah, I don't know. I really don't. I mean, it's a really cool piece, and it looked like it was about as big as a Volkswagen. But yeah, I mean, that would be a really cool find if that was still out there. But I mean, I've heard stories of that sort of thing. You know, there was famously a there was a Batman sculpt for Kenner that, and it was wasn't a special Batman sculpt. It was just a story told to me illustrating some of the executives in certain toy companies. Naivete when it came to the actual products they were making. There was a meeting where a sculptor was asked to bring the Batman stuff he was working on to show some of the higher ups, and well, all he had was the sculpt, and so he took it to the meeting, and they were kind of passing it around or whatever, and you know. People enough people knew to be gentle with it,
right?
But this one guy, you know, takes it, looks at it, starts moving it around a little bit, and decides to drop it into his hot coffee.
What?
Because, oh, because he thought it was an action figure. He thought it was like, you know, well, this will just be like his a produced thing or whatever. And of course, the sculpt is destroyed.
Oh my god!
And the sculptor's just sitting there with his mouth agape. Looking at the guy going, well, you know, what the hell did you just do? So now they had to, you know, they had to pay him another $4,000 to go back and resculpt the thing or whatever.
Oh, my God.
You know.
That'd be a situation where somebody like me, if I had that talent, was doing that, and they did that, I'd been like, you are an idiot.
Yeah, well.
You are an idiot. I don't care how much money you get paid. You're dumb. What?
You would be the guy. You would do it on purpose. I'll give you that much credit. But otherwise, you would be that guy. That would.
That's true. I've dropped.
Like you're talking about smashing the Brontosaurus thing from He-Man. I'm like, does the name Sorod mean?
Yeah, I dropped a Sorod in an antique mall after telling the guy.
Yeah, after lecturing the guy about how fragile.
One of the most fragile figures fumble right out of my hands onto the floor. I now own that Sorod that I.
That's why you're sad. The Brontosaurus got broken.
Because that way I could have broken it.
Yeah, exactly. You missed your opportunity.
I broke a.
Didn't you break one of Danny's?
I broke Danny's Titus weapon.
Oh dear.
I didn't mean to. I happened to have my thumb in just the wrong place and pressed just the wrong way with it as I was passing it back, and the handle snapped right off of my hand.
Or you do what I do when I visit Danny and touch nothing.
Which is what I do when I visit Dave's. I touch nothing.
Hands in pockets.
Elbows in.
Yep, that's what Carrie and I have the thing. Elbows in. Every time we're in an antique mall, she tells me, elbows in. My hands go in my pockets, and I walk around going, the stuff looks neat, I guess.
Right.
Don't touch any of it, though.
Just ask for an adult to help.
Yeah. Well, I've broken plenty of my own stuff, too, so...
Why do you use that in your defense? In my defense, I've destroyed my own priceless
items.
All
of my Earthworm Jim's heads are broken because they've been fired on accident and flown across the floor, and the heads have snapped off the pegs, and I've had to glue the heads back on. or I had, oh my god, the cops figure that his head pops off. I can't think of what his name is, but he had a cap firing mechanism in his head, and of course he's all gold plastic.
Oh my
and I
God.
Was filming it, and I was showing it, and it hit the button, and it flew up like, you know, not even a couple of inches, and fell onto the table. And when it hit the table, it just smashed into 1,000 pieces on camera, and I went, oh, well, that's not cool.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with that stuff, man.
Apparently it's not made to last.
Yeah, it's made to entertain a child for like a week.
That's right. So, yeah, Volume 3 will be a February 2021 event as far as Kickstarter. If things go the way. It's 2 years, so it'll be 2 years between all of them.
You might be dead by then.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll be fine.
No, you don't understand. Dave is just living long enough to see Star Wars, and after that, he could care less what happens.
Yeah, pretty much. If a meteor hits the theater when the credits roll, I'm good.
If I look over and Dave is just gone with a smile on his face, I'll be like... Well, he went the way he wanted to go.
We'll see about the smile. But.
Oh, yeah. We'll see about the smile.
Well, if a meteor hits, that's just less work for Blake. So that's.
Well, that's true. We had a good run.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, though. I mean, February 2021, you had a year in between the first book and the second book, kind of, didn't you?
Well, it was 2 years. It was 2017, was the That's first right, one. Yeah. So 2019 is this one, and so 2021 is the next one.
That works out. I think it's a good you know, good thing to have. So.
Yeah, I mean, because you got to figure this was a production year. So the year before was a gathering year, writing year. This is a production year. Next year's a sell year.
Yeah.
And you just keep doing that. The sell year and the production and the writing year kind of are the same thing.
Yeah.
But because I'm gonna have, you know, I'll have 450 to 500 extra books I've got to go through once the Kickstarter stuff is fulfilled.
So, right.
Because I'm printing out 1,000 of them again, just like the first one.
Wow.
And I will go ahead and say that I am still trying to figure out the right way to reprint Volume 1. There's been a lot of people ask, and I'm trying to get it done. I really would like to just do a reprint of 500, and my printer is telling me that that's going to cost a lot of money.
Really?
To do that small of a run.
Oh, wow.
So I don't really want to do another 1,000 because I don't know if the market's big enough to handle that.
Right.
And I don't want to sit on a bunch of books.
Why don't you just do a Kickstarter for it? I've seen people do that.
Yeah, that has been discussed. The real problem with that is I need Kickstarter to let me set my goal in backers and not cash.
Oh, yeah.
Because all that cash that I charge for shipping overseas goes into that final number.
Right, right, right.
So that doesn't do me any good if I'm asking for $10,000 or whatever and I get $10,000, but $6,000 of that is overseas shipping.
Well, what about some of the there's some of the other ones. You know, Kickstarter is always the option, but there's also like
Indiegogo
and stuff like that. Yeah.
You know, the one that really made the most sense when I was thinking about it is just is GoFundMe.
Yeah.
But it's just not set up that way to handle like a pre-order system.
Yeah.
I mean, I could, and I really should actually put up a little Toys at Time Forgot website where I could take my own pre-orders, but the difficulty there is there's no finite time or what have you to get stuff across. It's just kind of a slow trickle. So one of the first people on board for something like that might have a year wait or longer in order for me to get the money I would need to print the book,
right,
to reprint the book. I mean, I would love to do it. I'm not intentionally trying to keep it from anybody, but it's expensive. And we did think about doing another Kickstarter, but without being able to control or without being able to like separate out that shipping cost somehow, it just doesn't do me any good unless I set the goal to be something ridiculous, which then that'll probably get, you know, I'll get heat for that. Well, the first right. Kickstarter wasn't even this much, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, I'm just trying to play it safe. But, yeah, so I'm trying. And if it comes down to me having to do it on my own nickel, you know, I'll look into that once I have enough nickels.
Right, exactly.
But in any case, I think the people who have seen Volume 2 there's a lot of excitement around it. I personally think it's a better book than the first one, mainly because I've done one now, and so I kind of know what goes into it and what makes for a better presentation, maybe a better story here and there. So like I said, a handful of people have seen it. I did have it proofed by a handful of folks, and of course Randy, who wrote the foreword, saw it, and he wrote back a few days after he got it and said this is better than the first one, man. You really outdid yourself. So that was
awesome.
That was a good feeling.
That's cool.
So I hope, I can only hope that everybody else feels the same way.
Once again. I know Dave and I are excited for it and looking forward to it. I mean, I love the hell out of that first book.
I did too.
Yeah, it's just a magnificent piece of work. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, well, you know, it was one of those things, like I said, and this happens, you know, it's happening more and more around me, and I'm getting nauseous just thinking about it. If we don't get these stories now, man, we're not going to get them.
Right.
And these people are going to be gone, and the stories are going to go with them, and I just hate that. I really do.
Yeah, that's the sad part is those stories going away forever and not having them recorded somewhere for prosperity's sake.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the cusp of doing a similar book based around computer adventure games from the 80s, 90s. And
yeah, it's the same what happened to that. You had kind of announced that.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do, so I'm not going to be able to do it.
Really?
Yeah. You can thank Walt Disney for that.
Really?
Well, in order to
because of Lucasfilm being folded in, or Lucas Games.
Right, right.
LucasArts.
Yeah, LucasArts, Lucasfilm Games, and all that stuff now are the intellectual property of Walt Disney. And what I wanted to showcase just was going to cause trouble.
Really?
So in order to do the book I really wanted to do, I was going to have to cross the mouse, and I'm just not financially equipped to do so.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. That's
so,
you know,
it's a shame
people,
too, because they
control their IP so close to their chest, which by they have every right to do so.
Yeah, no, I don't begrudge them that at all.
Yeah.
My issue. My small issue is that, man, if I would have come up with this just a little bit sooner, prior to the actual buyout,
I probably
could have got away with it. But now it's not worth the risk, which is a damn shame, because I actually got some really interesting stuff that I was able to pull together on games that didn't make it. But I don't know what to do with it now. I'm just sitting on it, because I'm not going to be able to showcase it like I wanted to. And it was a couple of ex LucasArts or Lucasfilm Games guys that just said, yeah, man, you really want to tread light. Said they've personally gone afoul with Disney after the fact, and it's just like, it's just not worth it.
Right.
And I was like, well, you're probably right. So. In order to, like I said, there was a part of me that said, look, I'll just do the book and then I'll just sit on it. And maybe there'll come a time when I can do something with it. But I just don't want to put forth that great of an effort when there's no light at the end of that tunnel.
That sucks, because while it's not a huge area of interest to me, it is something. That kind of stuff is stuff that I
would have been interested
about.
Yeah, I would have absolutely bought that book.
Just from your initial description of it, I was like, all right, that'd be a book I'd read just because I'd want to know more about it. It's not something that's
stuff I grew up with.
Yeah.
I would love to learn.
Yeah, me too. I mean, when I was in college, I mean, that's what we did. We played adventure games on Commodore 64 or whatever. It is a little heartbreaking to think that I won't be able to do exactly what I wanted to do. But anybody who has anything with that they want to do with ex LucasArts or Lucasfilm Games IP, you're just stuck. There's not a lot you can do unless you go through the proper channels and license something. And that's, you know, you're talking, you know, potentially Astro Bucks there.
Right.
Like, for example, next year's the 30th anniversary of Loom.
Loom.
And I had been talking to Brian Moriarty, the guy that developed that game at Lucasfilm Games, for about a year now, talking about, because there was originally, he thought maybe there'd be sequels to that game, and he had it kind of laid out the way it would play out. And I approached him and I said, look, and he was one of the guys that said, you might not want to be doing this. So I was like, you know, next year's the 30th anniversary of Loom. And I would really love to do like a book on Loom about, because it was such a kind of a polarizing adventure game when it came out. People didn't know how to deal with it because it was so different at dealing with musical aspects of it instead of just straight out point and click and that sort of thing. And he was like, I would love to, but we just can't do it. Disney would eat our lunch. And which is a real shame because if you ever hear Moriarty talk, there's a few things out on YouTube where you can go, and he's done panels and presentation at the Game Developers Conference and that sort of thing. He's a really sharp guy.
Yeah.
And I just thought being able to spend some time with him talking about what's probably his greatest gaming achievement would just be awesome. And but again, it's just not going to happen. Which is
that's a shame.
It is a bummer, but in my cavaliering spirit, I've come up with another idea for something past Volume 3 that I'm kind of excited about that I won't delve into too deeply now. It's kind of like my secret scroll project right now.
Gotcha.
But it is, I will tell you, it is toy industry related. It's not with games. It's not with computer games or anything. So,
awesome.
But yeah, so that's, you know, I want to keep writing for as long as people are interested in hearing the stories that I'm trying to tell. And I think post Volume 3, you know, we're going to take a step back and gauge the potential audience for more books in the Toys That Time Forgot series.
Right.
Take a pause or whatever. I'd be silly to stop writing them if people are still wanting them. But I don't. At the same time, I don't want to cause unproduced toy fatigue on anybody.
Right.
So I'm looking at these other little projects to kind of, you know, offset, you know, keep my creativity kind of brewing while we try to figure out what to do with this particular series of books. There was talk of maybe after the third one getting a compendium type thing together where I take the best chapters from the first three books and maybe expand on them and put them in like a nice slipcover type offering or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can do, but
nice.
Don't know if, especially if I can't get these reprints off the ground, then that would be a possible way to do something a little special that's not flat out Volume 4. But I don't know. I mean, I will let the people decide at that point. I could keep doing Kickstarters until one doesn't fund, and then there you go.
Then that's your answer.
Yeah, the people have spoken, right? But Kickstarter is such maybe you can tell just from, you know, people that you know who have done them and the cracking of their voices during that whole process. It is a living nightmare to do a Kickstarter. It is just, there's so many moving parts, and you really don't see it there when you're staring at the screen, scrolling through all these rewards and these goals and all this stuff. But man, there's just so much that goes into it. It's just, and to be a singular person or persons, a couple, and not like a team of people trying to pull one of these things off, it's just,
right.
It takes a lot out of you.
Well, yeah, I imagine. I've seen, you know, we've seen some, of course, the Turtles book we talked about earlier was a famous one that guy got, you know, walked away with 14 grand and just the money's gone. Like, the books were apparently never even got to print because the money just gone.
Yeah.
you've got board game companies. I'm trying to think of the company that was doing the Evil Dead board game. They were doing the Terminator 2.
I can't remember, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah. They didn't have the rights?
Well, no, they had the rights.
Okay, then I'm thinking of a
different
one.
They had the rights, and they successfully pushed these Kickstarters, but then, you know, it's been like 4 years now for the Evil Dead one and like three for the Terminator 2. Mm. And this company is just, they keep saying that they're going to ship them, and they've just never turned a product. And people have filed lawsuits against them because it's like, you know, you took our money, and, you know, the IP holders have pushed against them with court, you know, and it's just, it's crazy how, it's amazing to me how easy one of those can go so terribly, terribly wrong.
Well, the thing is, it's, you know, the flip side of crowdfunding is that you have these people who have an idea, they have a dream, they have a concept, they want to do a book, they want to do a game, but they've never, like, the beauty of it is, you know, you don't have to deal with gatekeepers and businesses and, you know, and all these people putting up roadblocks.
Yeah.
The flip side of that is that you don't have the experience.
Yeah.
Of you know, you don't know, you know, you underestimate every cost. You know, like Blake was talking about international shipping. That's one that bites everybody in the ass.
Yeah.
Like you need to look into shipping before you even start one of these things. You need to look into production. We were talking about the Zika guys who underestimated what it was like to deal with China. You know, it's a foreign country with, you know, that's not America, and you're having your stuff in a factory that, you know, you can't just go, you know, I have rights. No, not in China you don't. You got to play nice. You got to play ball. You got to have people that speak the language. You know, there's all these factors that nobody, you know, you're just like, I just want to write my book and have people read it, and that's great. But there's a million things that go into it, and that's why a lot of these things fail, because they don't ask for enough money. And, you know, and then Kickstarter takes a bite. You know, all these people take a bite. And you got to pay taxes on that money.
Yeah.
It's really easy to get yourself in deep because you don't have the support systems that a big company does.
Yeah.
That's why someone like Boss Fight succeeded, because they were all Hasbro guys and they kind of, you know, knew the game.
Yeah,
so, I think, you know, and Blake's done good too, because, you know, printing magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I would never, I will never back another video game on Kickstarter ever again.
Oh, God, no.
Those guys, no. I mean, they ask for, you know, like I've seen computer game guys ask for like $900,000, and they get $4.6 million, and then they blow through that money like it's not even there.
Yeah.
And then you got no product at the end of the run, and you wonder what exactly just happened. Well, usually what happens is when they get the money, get all this extra money, the game gets way too ambitious, way too quickly, because you've got all this extra stuff, and now you can do the stuff that you thought maybe you couldn't do earlier on. Well, it turns out you couldn't do it then either.
Exactly.
And then people start leaving, was what happens, because you can't pay them anymore because you're out of money. And so you have programmers that start leaving, you know, design – you know, graphics design people start leaving, and that's why the team falls apart, because the money's gone. And then you've got the one or two dudes who, you know, spearheaded the whole thing coming back to Kickstarter and shrugging their shoulders to their, you know, 1,200 backers, going, well, you know, we tried, guys.
Yeah, I've seen that exact scenario happen multiple times from afar, you know, never backing something, but just watching and reading this stuff on Facebook and going, oh boy.
Yeah, computer games and video games are notorious for that. All over Kickstarter, that, you know, they ask for X amount of dollars and they get way more than they asked for.
Yeah.
They get, you know, giddy and way too ambitious. And for the most part, not saying that this is any excuse, but for the most part, these teams are young kids, younger.
Yeah.
You know, in their 20s or whatever, and maybe didn't really, you know, has never really seen that size of a check come through before anywhere.
Yeah.
And you get a little crazy. And the next thing you know, you've drained, you know, the money that you had set up for the project, and you got no project.
Exactly. It's crazy. I know. Even before I backed my first Kickstarter, I knew, I was like, yeah, apparently you don't back a video game Kickstarter on Kickstarter, because it just never happens.
Yeah, it's
and the few that do are not great.
They're going to be late every time.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not going to be exactly what you thought you were getting every time.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there are examples out there that, have done the right thing and performed and all that stuff, but to me, it would always appear like that was the exception, not the rule.
Right.
So.
Actually, my first Kickstarter was a video game.
Was it really?
Did it pay?
Shadowrun Returns.
Oh.
Did it pay off? Would you
Happy with it? You know, I never actually played the game. I pledged at a level where I got like the book.
Mm.
Just because I love the IP Shadowrun. But I mean, I know it came out, and I know they've done sequels. So like, I mean, I guess it was okay.
Did you collect?
Nobody seems in love with it.
Did you collect the Shadowrun figures when they did them?
Funny story. They were not put in with the action figure section at Toys R Us.
They were put in with the
because
section,
Mad Men ran the store.
I didn't run that back then. Stop.
Yeah. So I missed them when they first came out, and I thought it was one of those things that like Toy Fair magazine always talked about, but like never actually got produced. And then one day I found out that they had in fact been produced, and after about 48 hours on eBay, David has all of them.
Well, David will be very interested in Volume 3.
Volume 3, boo his boo.
Yeah.
Boo his boo, sir.
So you have to stay alive till 2021.
Boo his – can I say one word and you give me a yes or no?
Sure.
Dunkle's on.
I don't know.
Ah.
I don't know that name.
Well, you would know. It would be a toy of great size.
Yeah, that's probably a no then.
That's such a weird toy line too, because it was this.
They were action figures, but it was also like a HeroClix kind of game.
Yeah,
it was
a HeroClix-y kind of game.
Right, yeah. Right. So.
And what a weird property too, because at that point, I don't think the tabletop game was really well known at all.
No, Shadowrun was a big RPG. When I was in college, Shadowrun was a big RPG, and they were like in second or third edition when those. I think maybe second edition.
Really?
Because second edition came out after I graduated. But it was probably at the tail end of their popularity as their notoriety as right. as a tabletop RPG.
Well, that was one of the things you just got off Kickstarter, wasn't it? Was a new Shadowrun book?
New Torg.
A new Torg.
Yeah, they brought Torg back too.
That's what it was. They brought Torg back.
Yeah.
Although that's Torg, I remember.
You remember Torg over Shadowrun?
I remember Torg over Shadowrun.
Torg was a weird like when I was in college, like that was like the. They kept having these games that like try to cram all the different genres together.
Yes.
And I think Torg was the most blatant.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, yeah, there's different realities and each one has its own thing. So this is a fantasy one and this is a dinosaur one.
Yeah.
And they got creative with some of them. But I kind of liked, and then Rift was just like everything gets dumped into one big pot. And Shadowrun like was the one that tried to make it organic and
yes.
all fit together.
Yeah. It was a very kind of not steampunky.
No, it was cyberpunk.
Yeah,
it was cyberpunk meets
yeah,
fantasy.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, so Dunkelzahn's a dragon, right?
Yes, Dunkelzahn is the dragon.
Blake was Googling.
Blake was Googling
yeah,
it
like,
while
what
we
the hell is a Dunkelzahn?
Well, he's a major character in most of the early source books and stuff. And then apparently he gets murdered in one of the...
Dun, dun, dun!
He gets murdered. Well, there's like,
spoiler alert!
They had a funeral for him at Gen Con.
Oh, really?
I got the badge from the funeral.
That's amazing. God bless Gen Con. People thought Comic-Con got crazy. Some people that have never paid any attention to Gen Con have no idea. None. Oh, Gen Con. God bless it.
Yeah, that's I think that's a negative on your Dunkelzahn, man. Oh. Sorry.
Well, it would probably have been a little too ambitious for what they were doing, but I was like, Jesus, maybe they had ambitions.
Yeah.
Like I could see like a sketch somewhere of a 2 foot long
dragon.
Yeah, it would be huge.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, there you go, Dave. Volume 3. We'll have some.
Okay, I could spend all night asking like dumb. You know, question.
Yes, sir. Give me a yes or no.
Well, no, that was the big one was a dragon, because like
right,
and Dunkelzahn was like the dragon.
The dragon.
Yeah, no, I don't currently have no. I just looked at my Shadowrun folder, and there are no dragon likenesses to be found.
Oh,
sorry about that. Hey, that didn't mean it's not out there, but you know.
No, it would have been a little. From what they were doing, it would have been a little. It would have been super ambitious.
Right.
Yeah, because those figures were huge.
Yeah, like, those figures were. Well, they were like Marvel Legends scale.
Yeah,
basically.
They were about 6-7
inch
scale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing them, like it shows.
I, okay. I was going to say, I never did.
Yeah, Dave never did until he, like, stumbled across
it. Again, until I found out it was a thing that happened, and then it was like eBay got hit full for, including the mail away.
Yeah, Dave was like, take my money.
I was like, Jesus Christ, I have been waiting for these for years.
I just remember seeing them in the bins at GameStop for a dollar.
I do too. That's where I remember seeing them.
Ugh. Well, see, I never went to GameStop because I never played.
You didn't have a.
Play games.
Dave didn't play a game until I let him play G.I. Joe on the PlayStation 3.
Was it
Rise of Cobra?
Yeah, it was the tie-in game for Rise of Cobra. There was that, and then Arkham, I think.
And then Arkham came out, and Dave bought his own PS3.
Yeah.
And
I bought Arkham. Arkham City came out. I bought my own PS3.
That's right, yeah. And Dave had to get over motion sickness from playing the games. It took him a while.
I think I was sitting too close.
Yeah. He's good now. It's all good.
Yeah. Got to be careful with that stuff.
Yeah, that ain't a lie.
Hey, man.
I tried.
I can quit XCOM 2 anytime I want.
Yeah, Dave's going through his 7th playthrough of XCOM 2.
Well, it glitched out and, like, broke, and I had to, like, wipe it. I had to delete everything from the hard drive and reinstall everything.
So Dave's like, well, I started fresh. I guess I got to go again.
Well, man, I tried other games.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you guys what. I tried playing. I bought the 3D versions of Batman Arkham.
Oh, my Arkham, God.
The first two Arkhams. I bought the 3D versions of those and started playing the first one with 3D glasses on. And finally, I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. My head hurts real bad.
Yeah.
It's like, this is too much for me. I'm like, stuff's flying at me. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, no, I just, if it doesn't play on the 2600, I don't have anything to do with it.
Well, that's the thing, is I had a 2600.
Yeah.
And then 30 years later, 35 years later, I got a PlayStation 3.
Yeah, they've got a PlayStation 3.
But everything in between I missed.
You had a computer, though.
I had a computer, but like I had like the... that's why I got excited when he was talking about the adventure games. I had Loom.
Which, yeah.
Like, I think I got to the second thing you had to come up with a tune for and got stuck. I had a lot of the Sierra games. I love the King's games. Quest and Space Quest.
Yeah,
and
right.
Leisure Suit Larry and...
Galaxies
was like much later. I got a computer specifically to play Galaxies.
Yeah.
But I had the LucasArts pack, so I had like TIE Fighter versus X-Wing.
Right.
Which I loved. Because in college, they came out with X-Wing, and like we would literally hang out in somebody's room and watch them play the X-Wing and the TIE Fighter.
Yeah, one of my favorite, as an aside story, one of my favorite unmade LucasArts games from the research for that book was an adventure game that was going to be Star Wars.
Oh.
It was called The New Emperor, and the hero, you were going to play C-3PO.
Okay, I can see why it didn't get made.
Well, they figured that C-3PO was an interesting choice as a lead because of his potential puzzle solving skills and all these, you know, games are always laden with puzzles.
Yeah. But it's the player's puzzle solving skills. So you're trapped in this awkward, unable Android. To move body.
Yeah.
Wow, I can see why that didn't go through.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
It was the only instance of a Star Wars adventure type game that I came across. I don't think it got very close to being made, but there was a design document for it and everything, so they did put some effort into it.
Interesting. It's a very interesting concept for sure. It would have been.
That's a word for it.
It would have been very very odd to play. Especially if C-3PO can't run or anything and you're being chased, that would
tend to... Well, an adventure game, like in the classic Sierra adventure games, there was very little of that. It happened,
right.
But it was usually kind of like a slow-paced chase.
Well, I'm just thinking of stuff like... Because the only adventure games I ever played really were Prince of Persia and...
Well, it's not really an adventure game. That's a classic video game.
Like a scroller or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you needed 3PO to jump, run, squat, or anything like that, you were going to be in trouble. But
yeah, none of that was happening with C-3PO.
Not really, no.
He'd have been like, oh my. God. That would have been a very interesting concept, though. It would have been very very cool.
Sure. That would have been a future JonTron video, that would have.
Yes, it would have been.
They would have sold tens of copies, I'm sure.
I might have bought one. Like, I might have bought one at the time, and I definitely would have buy one now from a dealer for too much money. But, like, it would never be, like, a thing that I cared about in any significant way. It would just be a terrible Star Wars game, and I'd be like, I have to have it.
Yeah. Dude, like, I must play it. I don't care how
you play as 3PO. What is wrong with these people?
I must play
it. It's amazing.
Jesus.
What were they drinking? I must have it.
I must have it. Give me some of it.
Put it next to my tape dispenser.
Oh, and I imagine doing the research for that book, there were probably just so many LucasArts games that never got anywhere.
Oh, dude, you have no idea. It's just, yeah. And some of them are just so cool sounding that it was just, it's, yeah. No, I mean, if, looking back at my outline, I had probably 25 games that I felt good about pursuing. I had enough information where I could go and start talking to people who were on the ground when it was being developed and that sort of thing. And but the problem was that 10 of them were LucasArts games or something like that. So that chops my book in half. And you can't really do a book called Missed Adventures without the Lucas stuff. So
right,
it's just one of those things.
Damn it, that'd have been cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe in another life or something, but not this one.
Yeah. Wow.
Goodness. There is a book, there is a book that was done, it's kind of hard to find now, in 2008 prior to the deal, called Rogue Leaders, The History of LucasArts. And I think the guy's name is Rob Smith. I hope I'm getting that right. But it was sanctioned. I mean, the foreword was written by Lucas himself, and it talked a lot about the game developments, the games that did come out, and it actually does mention a handful of these games that didn't come out. I mean, you remember when it was several years ago, probably around that same time, when all these logos popped up from Star Wars games that weren't made from LucasArts? Like, there was this big logo dump online that was like 15 or 20 logos from Star Wars games that were never made?
Vaguely, yes.
Okay, that came from that book, basically.
Oh.
Like I said, it's pretty hard to find. It's out of print, but...
yeah, it's $251 on the old Amazon.
Yeah, if you're into that sort of thing, it's worth a read. If you like, it's pretty well done.
Oh, I found one for $69, Dave.
Yeah, I saw that one, too. I just quoted the expensive one.
Oh, fair enough.
A better story.
Fair enough.
Maybe I wanted the cheap one. Thanks, Jason.
Hey, no problem. Buy it now before it's gone.
Well, apparently, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even know that book was existed, but
yeah,
I heard of it.
Yeah, neither did I until I started poking around this whole thing. And I was like, oh, well, that maybe I should get that and flip through it and see what's what. And so we found a copy, and I went through, and sure enough, it never in very much detail, but it talks about the failed sequels to Full Throttle. There were two of them that they tried to do after Full Throttle came out that never made it. There was, like I said, the mentions of the Loom sequels that Moriarty had envisioned but never got off the ground. There was another kind of adventure-ish type game called Sawyer that was involved time travel and aliens taking over the world and that sort of thing. That was really interesting. They had some really interesting concept stuff for that. They put a ton of work into that one too before the plug got pulled.
Wow.
There was, like I said, the New Emperor was another one, the Star Wars adventure game that they didn't do. One called Rapid Transit, which was about another kind of interdimensional thing that had to do with a train in San Francisco that disappeared into a tunnel and never came back, but ended up transporting these people to a different plane of reality or something, and they had to basically work their way back to their own reality.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, it sounded neat. And then there was one called I'm forgetting the name, but It had to do with like steampunk atomic type robot armies that were taking over these villages or whatever, and you were a magician.
Whoop.
And you basically had to use your know-how to defeat this. This apparently was a large. The villa, the top boss was this large woman, large German woman, and her army of these mechanical menaces were taken over. Forget the name of that thing. That really bogged me. I can't.
That's kooky sounded.
Can't think of it. But, you know, if I look at my computer right in front of me, I can tell you that that game was called Vanishing Act. There you go.
That would have been neat.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a there, and there's just a ton of – I mean, that's just a handful of the LucasArts stuff. There was so many. I mean, Sierra had their hand – you know, had a nice handful. And
oh, I imagine. Yeah. That was their bread and butter.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they tried to get – there was the Space Quest 7. They tried to get off the ground before everything. All the because Sierra's got a weird history. It got bought and sold so many times. There was a cool outer space one called Cloak that was really close to being done, to the point to where they were advertising that the game was coming out.
Oh, wow.
And it never came out. There was a political game that Al Lowe, the guy that created Leisure Suit Larry, was going to do called Capital Punishment.
Yeah.
It was kind of it was more of a, it wasn't straight out adventure. It had like arcade levels to it, but it was one of the levels was Bill and Hillary's whitewater rafting adventure.
Okay,
where they were on this raft and you had to navigate this river while there were people. There was like Rush Limbaugh was on shore like slinging mud at you. And,
oh, my God.
And you had to go around and you had to pick up the tax returns as they floated by. And it was really, really heavy, heavy satire from that era of the Clinton administration.
That's funny.
And it was one of those things where after they canceled it, they were like, I think that someone said, well, you know, 10 years, no one will even know who the Clintons are. And, of course,
yeah.
That went differently. But it was a really – it was an interesting story about why it didn't happen, though, because they had to build a new engine for it because it had that arcade-type levels.
Right.
It wasn't – they couldn't just plug it into one of their typical adventure engines.
Right.
And the guy that built it was apparently a really sharp young guy, but the and when they started, they did the initial level, which was this whitewater rafting thing, and it played really well, and they were like, okay, they got kind of excited about it, and the more they added to it, they kept noticing that the game was bogging down for whatever reason. Well, when they wrote the code. They wrote it to where every time something changed on the screen, the program rewrote the entire screen.
Oh wow!
It didn't hold things in place. So the more you added to the game, the worse that lag got. And they got through a good portion of it before they realized what was going on, and it became one of those things where, okay, we're either going to have to scrap this entire thing and start over, or we just got to scrap the whole thing. And at the end of the day, they just scrapped the whole thing.
Scrapped the whole thing. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
If you go out, if you look, if you type in Sierra Capital Punishment, you might be able to find some very small screen caps for it because they did publish some screen caps in like their fan newsletter that they did back in the day. But yeah, I mean, just so many little instances like that. Back, I don't know how much y'all want to talk about this, but back to Lucasfilm really quick. Sam and Max, who are friends at Boss Fight, are now putting out Max. There was a second game. There was a first game, Sam and Max Hit the Road, which was a popular point and click type adventure game that Lucasfilm did, spawned a sequel that was just called Sam and Max Freelance Police, which I think is what the comic ended up being called. that they did as well. But that game was finished, and they didn't put it out.
Really?
Mm.
Much to the chagrin of the people who worked on it, and Steve Purcell, the guy who created Sam and Max, the characters, who did work at Lucas for a time. Everything I've come across, that game was done.
Wow.
And for whatever, maybe political reasons, maybe a new team of executives came in at that time or something like that, and it just never got released.
Wow. Unreal.
Yeah, and it sometimes, you know, there's a bit of a happy ending to this stuff. I mean, did you see, it was a couple of years ago when it was revealed that Warcraft, that they did an adventure game based on Warcraft?
Before World of Warcraft happened, yeah.
Yeah. So it was, they did this whole, again, that was another game that was practically finished.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, Blizzard decided that it wasn't up to their standards and they didn't put it out. But apparently, not long after the story started coming out about its existence, it leaked.
Yeah.
So you could go play it if you knew where to look and find it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And the people that played it actually said it was not a bad game, really. But for whatever reason.
Just an adventure game based on World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But it was very cartoony looking.
I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah, the way they did the graphics. And I think it's like a fan version of like they were able to, you know, off grid, you know, burn discs of it and like create big box art like it would have been if it come out when it came out, that sort of thing. But
which is crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god, it's amazing.
Anyway, enough computer game stuff.
Well, what do you say we wrap up the conversation, Mr. Wright, so you and the lovely wife can go get some dinner?
Yeah, that's right. Hot chicken calling my name.
That's right, damn it. Get some hot chicken.
That's right.
And Dave and I are going to do the same. Well, not hot chicken, but we're going to get some food ourselves. And Blake, thanks for hanging out with us, brother, for chatting with us about everything from your book to everything else under God's green earth. We appreciate it, my friend. And we are both very excited, as well as I'm sure most of the listeners who back the Kickstarter as well are excited to get that volume 2 in their hands later this fall.
Yeah, so. Hey, I'm excited to get the feedback on this one. I really am. I mean, it was
absolutely
the first one was I was so humbled by the response to the first one. I just hope that I was up to the task with the second one.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to having you on again when the book pops up and we can actually talk about the contents of the book in better detail without. As of right now, without everyone like who's kickstarted it waiting, so
right.
I look forward to being able to chat to you about a lot of it once we get it in our hands. So, brother, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And gang, David and I will be back next week with an all new show. We'll talk about Comic-Con as well as some other items that have come and gone since Dave and I were last on the air. So make sure you tune in next time. And until then, David.
You don't have to go home, but you can stay here.
The Toy Bar Peeps is closed. Blake's got to go get some hot chicken. Take care, guys.